This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Welcome in, everybody, to the flagship podcast. I am Chip Brown of Horns247.com, joined by my esteemed colleague, the one and only Eric Henry of Horns247.com. Full disclosure, Eric and I are recording on Tuesday, April 23rd. We are fresh off the weekend of the Texas Orange-White spring game, and the portal is hopping the portal's open until April 30th, and there's a lot of comings and goings that we will get into, Eric. From the comings side, Texas picked up a commitment from Arizona defensive tackle Bill Norton, 6'6", 325 pounds. Who spent his first 3 years of college football at Georgia before transferring to Arizona and becoming part of the big turnaround for the Arizona run defense last year under then defensive coordinator Johnny Nansen, who is now the linebackers coach at Texas. And of course, Texas already got a transfer from Tia Savea, who was a part of that Arizona defense. So Bill Norton was in for an official visit over the weekend during the Orange-White game, along with UCLA's Jay Toya. Toya, 6'3", 325-pounder, was part of UCLA's number two run defense, number two in FBS in run defense last year, just ahead of Texas. The UCLA Bruins only gave up 80 yards per game on the ground, but Jay Toya has announced that he will stay at UCLA. So Texas still looking around for defensive tackle help after Steve Sarkisian said following the Orange-White game that the defensive line, well, interior defensive line depth is not where it needs to be, Eric. So, Texas moving and shaking in the portal. And of course, news has now made its way out that Terrence Brooks has joined Savion Red as Longhorns, who will be entering the transfer portal on the way out. Your thoughts?
Oh man, what is going on, Chip Brown? We recap after we did our instant reaction from the Texas 2024 Orange and White game. Appreciate everyone who had a chance to watch that. Chip, over 2,800 views. So thank you.
Come on.
Who watched. Really appreciate that. Man, it's before I get into kind of the thoughts, it's Chip, does it still kind of get a little time to get adjusted to hearing the fact that a player, a UCLA player who entered the portal, came on a visit to Austin and then decided to stay with his current program? Like, it's still one of those things that in college sports, and listen, the cat is out of the bag, right? There's no popping the wine or champagne on that one, but it still takes a little time to get adjusted to that, right? Just feels very much NFL style transactional. But the reason I mentioned that, Chip, is because that's just the way you have to view things in today's landscape. You talked about Steve Sarkisian talking about the fact that he made an assessment after spring and he opened it. I believe you asked him the question first. What were kind of the areas that he believes his team needs to improve upon. And then I followed up with a follow-up because his answer was pretty blunt. He said, hey, you know, obviously the defensive line in depth is not where it needs to be. And I, you know, with my one question, asked Steve, you know, do you mind elaborating on that and expounding on that? And he gave what I thought was a very insightful answer, talking about just needed big humans, you know, on the depth. And it's true. I mean, I think Chip, you know, I'm not going to accuse Sark of watching this illustrious program, but I'll be honest. Like, I think it, especially when you listen to the answer and he talks about the fact that the front line is fine. And then you listen to some of his quotes in the offseason, in the spring, and he's talked about being high on, you know, Trey Moore. And we've seen Colton Vasek step up, right? So you can read between the lines and say, okay, it's got to feel reasonably good about his depth at end, you know, on the edge. And then we talk about some of the things that we've, he talks about some of the things that we've talked about on this show, which is you're not replacing Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy. And if Chip, the approach was entering spring, okay, let's take a look at some of the guys we have, some of the guys we've recruited. You know, roster attrition is going to happen. Guys are going to leave. So you have a Zach Swanson who enters the portal. You know, maybe you have one or two of those guys you recruited out of the Swanson, Bryant, Bledsoe, Mitchell. Maybe one of those guys, just for whatever reason, doesn't pan out the way you'd like them, right? Don't want to assign that to anyone yet. I guess Sadir Mitchell would be the most likely candidate to fit that role, but obviously he can still rebound and have a great fall. But just, you know, let's play along. Here's the hypothetical. So then you realize, okay, we brought in Atiyah Saveah. That may or may not be a fit. You know, you got to see. And then you say, okay, well, now we've gone through the spring and we think we've got a better assessment of how we're going to go about replacing Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy, but maybe, just maybe, we need more bodies. Sark said we need more big humans. Billy Norton is a big human, 6'6", 325, 335. I can't remember if it's 325, 335, Chip.
325, I think.
325. So certainly not lacking size, right? That's a start to the equation. Chip, I leaned over to you because you and I were sitting next to each other in the press box at DKR for the spring game. And we talked about a couple plays where it just looked like guys, you know, we use the old binoculars and we looked at the interior defensive line and looked like, yeesh, that leaves a little bit to desired. And yes, it's spring, right? It's a spring game. You got to take that into account. You know, some guys, I don't want to say some guys aren't going full speed, because when you play in the trenches, you got to be going, right? But, you know, maybe some guys are feeling some things out. We certainly saw some players hold up on a couple hits. Xavier Filsimi, most notably, had a couple shots he could have taken some guys, but he played it smart, Chip. Don't take out your own teammates. I will say CJ Baxter maybe didn't get the message. Michael Taff ate one on the corner.
He held on to Baxter's ankle like a, you know, like a dog with a bone.
Yep. But to bring it all the way back home to my point about the roster construction and still, you know, taking time to get hearing, still getting used to hearing the concept of a guy coming on a visit. And then I'm going to remain with my previous club is that's just where we are in college football when it comes to roster attrition, roster construction. It's why, Chip, I think the general manager spot's probably going to be one of those high paid spots in college football 3, 4, 5 years down the road, because this is where you make your money and you win championships. So yeah, Chip, we will see what comes out of this, but that obviously is a spot they'll have to address. And then I'll pass it back to you on this one. Now the cornerback spot may be one that you have to address with the loss of Terrence Brooks.
Yeah, Terrence Brooks, who played a ton of football the last 2 years at Texas, played more snaps than any corner on the team last year, played 589 snaps, more than Malik Muhammad's 479 snaps, more than Ryan Watt's 422 snaps, more than Gavin Holmes 319 snaps. But as I reported throughout the spring in the Insider, they were looking to increase the competition for Terrence Brooks. And Gavin Holmes was a guy who I heard more about than I did regarding Terrence Brooks, who came in a little heavy in the spring at 209. And so when, you know, when Terrence Brooks announced he was going into the portal, I wasn't stunned because, again, he wasn't the name I was hearing the most about. You know, we heard a lot more about Jalen Gilbo, Nickel, than we did about Terrence Brooks. And I think Jalen Gilbo, Jahdae Barron are a couple names we have to watch as Texas tries to figure out how they're going to, you know, increase the depth at corner. We know Gavin Holmes has a lot of experience. We know Malik Muhammad is a surefire dude and a guy I think will contend for all conference honors, maybe even this year for Texas. But that field corner position where Terrence Brooks started last year is going to be the one that is going to have a lot of, you know, interesting competition going into the summer and fall camp. And who knows, does Texas look into the portal for a cornerback? I mean, they've recruited really well at that position. Warren Roberson's a guy who's coming on and got good praise during the spring. You've recruited Kobe Black and Wardell Mack, two very highly sought after, you know, recruits in the 2024 recruiting cycle. Kobe Black got beat for a touchdown in the orange-white game, but also had an interception in the orange-white game. So this is going to be, you know, competition that will go on into the summer and fall camp. And of course the portal, as we mentioned, is open until April 30th. So we'll keep an eye out for that. And, you know, I think Texas feels good about their overall depth in the secondary. I mean, Austin Jordan is also a guy who can play corner out of that powerhouse Denton Ryan program, high school teammate of Anthony Hill. And so, you know, Sarkisian even hinted that they may be looking at some position changes going into the summer. And, you know, I'm hearing that's an area to keep an eye on, whether guys have been working at the nickel who could go to corner. You know, Jahdae Barron, we know, can do both. Jalen Gilbo is a guy I think they are really high on at that star nickel position. So don't be surprised if Jahdae Barron, who really didn't do much this spring because he was recovering from an ankle injury and just, you know, getting healthy, as Steve Sarkisian said. So that's going to be a fun storyline to watch, certainly. And then, you know, we mentioned Savion Redd also heading for the portal. Savion Redd, interesting story because he kind of carved out a niche for himself as the Wildcat quarterback last year in short yardage situations, had a lot of success early on, but then showed up for spring ball weighing 240. And that was, you know, a eye opener for sure. And he played in the orange white game, and then announced that on Monday he's headed for the portal. Not a shock when you consider that Texas has Jaden Blue, CJ Baxter, you know, Jarrett Gibson, and Christian Clark, and Trey Wisner. And Trey Wisner is the guy who kind of passed him by this spring, Eric. And Trey Wisner is a guy the coaches are really excited about. And they feel he can be a move guy. They feel he can be a between the tackles guy. And I had heard, you know, during spring ball that Savion Redd was the guy, kind of the quote odd man out, I was told. So we'll see, but Texas certainly has a lot of talent in the running back room. That is not an area that I think anyone right now is concerned about in terms of starting talent or depth. So, you know, it's portal palooza season. We'll certainly keep an eye on that, but your thoughts on the running back position.
Chip, really quick. I will touch on the running back spot. I just want to kind of cap the conversation at corner. This is my thing, Chip. We've heard Steve Sarkisian talk about the importance of the star position in PK's defense. And the star position, you know, or slot corner, teams call it a bunch of things, you know, nowadays. But that slot nickel corner, it's important across college football. I'm just going to get on my soapbox, and then I will get off and touch on the running backs. For as important as it is to have great cornerback play, right? And I remember asking Ryan Watts last year, Tashade Barron, is he overlooked because he plays inside? And Ryan Watts said, absolutely, right? And I just think there is a bit of an old school way that we kind of view football, right, with the outside corners, when the fact of the matter is, Chip, especially, you know, you can project at this level and the next level, the amount of players who work out of the slot and, you know, the way we view that slot receiver, initially it wasn't the number one guy, right? It was that shifty kind of guy who you can kind of get the ball in his hands, he can do some things. Nowadays, Chip, teams move their number ones around, you know, their playmaker in the offense. They move them around, and they're going to try to find a mismatch. You can't just stick a guy at slot, because I'm sure you remember this shit back in the day. It was like, all right, who's your weakest guy, you know, out of your three or four? All right, we'll put him in the slot, right? Now, that's not the case. Where I'm going with that is this. I crunched numbers because I just wrote, you know, what kind of does Terrence Brooks' departure mean for the secondary? Jade's played something like 350-something snaps between 2021 and 2022. He played 47 snaps at corner, outside corner last year, but something like 355 snaps combined 2021, 2022. So he can play outside corner, right? Now, so Jalen Gilbo won that job in 2022 as far as the star role. I'm probably speaking out of ignorance because I probably should go back and watch some of the film of Gilbo in 22. I feel like, Chip, Jade's value at star when healthy is more than the value of what he would be as a corner. And I'm saying that again, admitting ignorance, because I wasn't here to watch him play corner. So I should probably go back and watch some of that. I would rather the team either identify someone in the portal that they think is who has played corner specifically outside and will play that role, or put some of the faith in some of the guys you've recruited. That's just my feeling. That's no slight on Jalen Gilbo, who Sark was very high on, saying that they feel like he's back to his 2022 form. So just want to make that point. On to the running backs.
Well, and I'll just say that I'm hearing the, you know, sources talk about Jalen Gilbo, I think it's going to be hard to keep him off the field. So either Barron's going to play nickel and they give Gilbo a look outside, or it's going to be Gilbo at the nickel with Barron playing outside, because I just get the feeling the way that Gilbo came on this spring, it's going to be hard to keep him off the field. But go ahead with your thoughts on the running back
situation. No, that's incredibly helpful context. It's pertinent context. So I appreciate you putting that in there, because I did kind of touch on that a bit in the piece. I appreciate that, Chip. With Savion Redd, you know, I kind of had to reframe my thinking on his weight gain, right? Because in one sense, I guess the way I was viewing it was, okay, you're talking about a guy was listed at times when between what, 211 and 217, you know, kind of listed in that-ish range-ish last year. And I'm thinking, okay, all right, he's the wildcat back, someone who kind of carved out a niche in short yardage. I'm thinking, okay, I don't mind him bulking up a bit to 240. Now, with that being said, you got to remember someone who started his career as a wide receiver, right? Like, there's not many 5'10", 240-pound wide receivers walking, you know, this earth as far as playing football, right? It's interesting. I mean, Chip, we saw him opening day of camp. He had that deal on his wrist, you know, so it appeared he had some sort of injury. That obviously shouldn't play a factor in his conditioning. But him coming in a bit heavy probably hurt his chances. I feel like, Chip, to the point you were making, is what hurt his chances more than anything else is the fact that Trey Wisner is someone who is just, they can't keep off the field. CJ Baxter, Jaden Blue spoke about, hey, you don't talk about someone who legit never stops working. First guy on the field, just always wanted to be out there improving, getting better. That is Trey Wisner. So I think that probably played a factor more than anything else. And I'll admit, Chip, overall, and again, you know, you've heard me talk about this ad nauseum because I've written about it a ton for the site. Texas has struggled in short yards over the past 2 years, and they struggled in red zone last year, right? So no pun intended. So even in the area that's, you know, was kind of quote unquote Savion's red specialty, they still struggled. So I would rather them identify a guy, whether it's Trey Wisner, who you can move around, but certainly if you just take a look at him at special teams, he ain't got no issue with contact, right? He certainly has no problem going on there and getting his, to use the old Marshawn Lynch quote, I'll clean it up. Sometimes you just got to take your face mask and put it through a blankety blank. He has no problem doing that, right? You hope that CJ Baxter, with certainly his size, can do that as well. So we'll see what happens there. But no, I mean, at running back, I think that spot, and also let's just call a spade, you know, Jarrett Gibson and Christian Clark look like they are coming. You know, we've talked about them physically and just their size makeup, but getting a chance to see them out on the field in the orange and white game, they look like players who will be reckoned with the next few years as well. So it makes sense that he and Kai Woods, you know, decide to make a decision to leave the program, and that spot is set. So no surprise there.
Yeah. I like the running back room for sure. I mean, offensively, Texas looks like it's going to have to figure out how to get everyone on the field. I mean, especially at receiver, when you look at the talent that we saw in the orange white game with the plays being made by Ryan Wingo and Jonte Cook, DeAndre Moore, Isaiah Bond, Matthew Golden, as we've reported, was slowed by the injury, the foot injury that he had at Houston. So he got kind of a late start to his spring, but they feel really good about Matthew Golden. And Silas Bolden's not even on campus yet. He'll get here. You know, Oregon State's leading receiver last year will get here as a grad transfer on Memorial Day weekend. So when you talk about, you know, that receiver room, it is loaded. And that'll be a fun storyline to watch as to how Steve Sarkisian decides to rotate those guys. And that may not be decided until deep into fall camp, but plenty of talent in that receiver room. And
Chip, can I ask you a quick question on receiver? And again,
yeah,
we got plenty of time to speculate, but you've been around Sark and you saw the lack of rotation at times, and everything I've heard from you and the people on the beat who were around for the Tom Herman years is that it was the exact opposite. He would shuffle out sets of three and four guys. Chip, it's out of Sark's character that we've seen from him as a head coach, but any chance you think there's so much talent in that receiver room that could be a way to get these guys on the field?
It's possible. I mean, if he trusts them all, then since they're all kind of starting out together, he can, you know, it's not like he's cutting the number of snaps from one player in this group. I mean, Jonte Cook had 8 receptions last year and he was very much, you know, behind the big three of Xavier Worthy, A.D. Mitchell, and Jordan Whittington. So, yeah, I mean, he can kind of sell it to the whole group as, listen, y'all are, you know, or this group or this four or this five or this six have made it so hard on us. We're gonna play all of you. And we'll go from there. We'll see who's the most productive. And if you keep producing, we'll keep rotating 5 or 6. It is out of character for Steve Sarkisian, but if he feels that good about it, that's a first world problem that he's going to love having. And if he really wants to keep everyone invested and they, again, if he trusts them and if they've earned the right, then maybe we do see that receiver rotation. Cause you're right. In the Herman era, there were times like even on third down, like I remember looking out on the field at Iowa State, expecting to see you know, Devin Duvernay and Colin Johnson, and, you know, it's Alvonte Woodard and, you know, some guys that you wouldn't really be counting on third down. And it was kind of like, what's going on here? So, long story short, we know Sarkisian likes to play the guys that he knows are going to be where they're supposed to be, have the trust of the quarterback, and know how to make this offense go. And that's going to be fun to watch, because I think that'll go on deep into fall camp. A couple, you know, obviously we talked about it some in our recap of the orange white game, but you know, I think there was a lot to like in that orange white game. And after talking to some team sources, putting a little context to things, you know, some guys who kind of flew under the radar. First of all, everyone was talking about Arch Manning, but Trey Owens, I mean, for a early enrollee freshman, he sure looked comfortable, and he was stepping up in the pocket and finding his old high school teammate, Thatcher Milton, the Cy Fair to Cy Fair connection. And I think the fact that Steve Sarkisian said, hey, no knock on the guys who put stars on quarterbacks, but we trust our evaluation of quarterbacks, that was a pretty important statement, I think, from Steve Sarkisian, because he's not gonna throw that out there if he thinks it's a freshman who's struggling. I thought that was a significant vote of confidence from Sarkisian to Trey Owens, didn't you?
No, Chip, I 1,000% agree. You know, especially with Steve Sarkisian, I think I've kind of gleaned this from him over the year, or I guess 10 months I've been here. I don't want to say he's calculated, because I think that's the wrong connotation, but Sark says things for a reason, right? Like, he doesn't just flippantly say things. And I know, you know, some people hearing this might be like, oh, well, what do you mean? Just Chip, I'm sure you've been around a coach a time or two in your career who they get around the cameras and they can't control themselves, and they just say bleep that, you know, like they kind of wish, like, oh man, I kind of wish I had that one back. Sark, at least, again, maybe I just got him in the fact that they went 12-2 last year, but who knows what he was at 5-7. But he just doesn't strike me as a guy who flippantly says things, good or bad. If he says them, it's for a reason. Whether he's trying to send a message to fans or to whoever he wants to communicate to, or to his own team. I think Steve is, again, I don't have a better word than calculated, and I don't mean that in a negative connotation. So to your point, yeah, I think that was Steve kind of puffing his chest out a little bit and saying, look, we know that Trey Owens might not have been, you know, the 5-star or whatever. And I believe we have him as a 4-star. I believe he was a 4-star all the way through. I could be wrong. But Trey Owens is someone who, yeah, you got to feel. I said two things about his performance when I was asked, doing some radio and some media earlier this week, is A, I think it solidifies, along with Arch Manning, solidifies the fact that Texas has the best quarterback room in the nation. I'm standing on that right now. And B, it solidifies Trey Owens as like, hey, this guy's here for a reason, and he's just part of our future, Chip. And, you know, this is also another thing, and I would love to get your thoughts on this. I think it also sends a message to all these receivers, right? We'll see. Excuse me. I should never eat before a podcast, because then you end up having a freaking, you know, that's on me. I was starving. Sorry about that, folks. Here's the point that I think in terms of message to receivers, Chip, is you can say, right, if you're a Ryan Wingo, and we'll get into a conversation about this, Ryan Wingo or a Parker Livingstone, Aaron Butler, well, I'm not playing year one. I should hit the portal, blah, blah. Start can turn and be like, yo, you see these quarterbacks I got? Are you sure you want to play elsewhere? Because I think I got a pretty good thing going. And I think that's part of the messaging as well, that to the guys on the roster, but also to players they may be recruiting, we got some damn good signal callers here, some guys who can spin it, and they're going to get the ball out of their hands, and quite frankly, run this offense well and make you look good.
Yeah, and I think Steve Sarkisian, with the way that he's managed the quarterback room, and he's seen how it was done at the highest level at Alabama, where they went from Tua Tagovailoa to Mac Jones to Bryce Young. And, you know, Mac Jones got 1 year as the starter, went off to the NFL. Then Bryce Young takes over. And I think Steve Sarkisian can sell that to those offensive players as well as anybody can. So that's the magic. And he said how fortunate Texas is to have a third year starting quarterback. We know Quinn Ewers was draft eligible after the 2023 season and opted to come back. Said, I feel like I've been rushing things. You know, I left high school early to start college. I want to take my time. And of course he, you know, has been made aware of the study that shows 30 starts in college is hugely beneficial to quarterbacks who go on to the NFL. And so Steve Sarkisian has done a nice job of managing his roster and selling the future. And, you know, because everyone's like, oh, my gosh, Arch Manning, is he better than Quinn? Slow down. The Quinn Ewers, Arch Manning, Trey Owens situation is playing out exactly as Steve Sarkisian laid out to Arch Manning, to Trey Owens, that it's Quinn Ewers' show in 2024. If everything plays out the way Texas wants, it'll be Quinn Ewers in 2024, Arch Manning in 2025. He'd be draft eligible after the 2025 season if he tears it up. Otherwise, he can come back. And then it's Trey Owens' show. And Steve Sarkisian's a guy who will deal with things as they come and knows that if everything's operating at a max level, that he's, you know, facing the possibility of losing guys after their junior year, he's willing to live with that, because that means the players were operating at an incredibly high level. And with his pedigree and his with the fact that guys are, you know, getting it done on the field, like A.D. Mitchell comes for 1 year. I was told before the season he wants to catch 50 balls and 10 touchdowns and go on to the NFL. He caught 50 balls and 10 touchdowns and went on to the NFL. So guys know that if they do what they're supposed to do, they're going to get the kind of opportunity in the Steve Sarkisian offense that is going to help them move on to the next level. So, I think the quarterback room right now is exactly the way Arch Manning and his family thought it would be, and certainly Trey Owens. So let's see how 2024 plays out. On the defensive side, Eric, I think, you know, you mentioned Colton Vasek, and I think Colton Vasek, he had three tackles for loss in the Orange-White game, including a sack. Heck, he had a tackle for loss followed by a sack at one point in the Orange-White game. And we know, with his length at 6'5", he's almost a carbon copy of Ethan Burke, his Austin Westlake teammate, who both of them were coached by Colton Vasek's dad, Brian Vasek, who's the defensive line coach at Austin Westlake. And Brian Vasek was a defensive end at Texas from 91 to 95. So getting some good coaching there. And of course, they were on the back-to-back state championship teams at Westlake and in 20 and 21 together. And Colton Vasek being healthy after having some back issues, a nagging back injury that really kind of, you know, relegated him to a redshirt season last year. He didn't see any action. Seeing him healthy and active on the field is significant, because they feel he is a player that they can really expect big things from. you know, they brought in Trey Moore. They've got Colin Simmons, but they're going to lose Baron Sorrell. Ethan Burke is draft eligible after this 2024 season. And I think they see big things for Colton Vasek. And so for him to have the orange-white game that he had was a good sign.
Chip, listen, I'm not going to add too much on that because, I mean, I think we both in agreement. I've talked about Vasek a bit. When someone gets that, you know, labeled that Baby Bosa nickname, it certainly makes your ears perk up, right? But I just want your thoughts on this. Does the back worry you a little bit? Because at this age, I guess it's a double-edged sword, right? Like, we're not talking about a 10-year pro, 10-year collegiate athlete who's having back issues, but you just hear back, right? And that is the one that always, that's one of those things, like even, I guess, Chip, in today's day and age, knee, you know, like knee back in the day used to be the thing, like, all right, if someone's having knee issues, they're kind of screwed. But now with, you know, modern technology and whatnot, you know, we've got guys who come from ACLs. Jonathan Brooks might be ready for camp, right? Like knees and an issue. But when I hear back, that one just gives me a little bit of pause. So I guess the question is, and well, by all accounts, he looked healthy, right? It wasn't like he seemed to be struggling with that. But my question slash statement is, when you have a back issue once, that doesn't kind of go away, right?
Well, we'll see. You know, but yeah, I mean, it is, it's a concern because he's a tall, lanky right. guy. He's 6'5". And you know, he's a guy who's a weight room warrior. So I think they've had to, you know, really make sure that he's getting all the treatment that he needs. Because I think they do feel like he's a potential, you know, impact player. So we'll have to see if he can, you know, maintain everything going forward after last season. Because, man, with that length,
yeah,
it's crazy to think of those two playing together. Ethan Burke and Colton Vasek as the bookend defensive ends on two state championship teams. What a nightmare for the opponent.
Chip, I know Texas high school football is good, but where the hell are you going to find two tackles to compete with that?
Right? I mean, both of them look like, you know, Max Crosby starter kits for crying out loud. Okay, Eric, before we get to take it or leave it, a couple of basketball nuggets. You wrote today about Texas and UConn starting a home and home series.
Listen, I got to give Rodney Terry credit. This is my personal philosophy, and maybe it stems from just me being, you know, naturally a football guy. I would like to see teams, especially in basketball, where it doesn't hurt you as much, in my mind, to take on more premier non-conference opponents, right? Because here's the thing. I think in football, because of the fact you only got, you know, regular season 12 games, and we'll see what happens with the conference title game and whatnot. If you beat up on, you know, your FCS opponents, right? Like, you don't get too much credit for it, but it's almost like in basketball, you get less, right? Because of the talent disparity and all the variables that can happen in football versus basketball. Whereas you make a statement, you get a win against, and look at the way the schedule's shaping up. They get a Big Ten opponent while Sterling Ohio State had a bit of a down year last year. We all know they had a coaching change and a situation where, you know, their interim coach is the one who led them on a run in the postseason, but they open up in Vegas, premier opponent. They head to Brooklyn to face, to compete in that holiday tournament. And then you face your back-to-back national champs in Danny Hurley and UConn. Date to be announced as far as when that date will, when that game will occur. But Chip, I like the fact it's a home and home. I'll tell you that much. Not that I'm someone who's against the neutral site games, but just for the folks here in Austin, you know, I mentioned this earlier, again, doing some media, that I think one thing I've learned about non-Texas football in this area is, you know, Austin is an event town just as a whole. I feel comfortable saying that. It is similar to South Florida where I came from, that it's an event town. Bringing back-to-back national champs, returning three starters, that's going to be an event, you know, and I think that's great to get that one at home. And then, of course, they'll play. It's scheduled to start next year, by the way. So it'll come to Austin next year. And then the following season, they'll head to UConn either play. More than likely, that game will be at XL Center. For those who aren't familiar with UConn basketball, they it's two home arenas, Gamble Pavilion at home for some of the, you know, old Big East opponents and some of the, you know, non-premier opponents. And then they'll play the more high profile games at XL Pavilion, which is in Hartford. You know, holds about 16,000 seats, so you won't have an issue getting a ticket there. But yeah, I think it's a big home and home for Rodney Terry and company. And just for, like I said, as far as scheduling, I like that. You know, I mean, Chip, there's going to be plenty of opportunities for Texas to fill their non-conference schedule, quite frankly, with a lot of the in-state non-conferences, UTA, Rio Grande Valley, you know, all of the schools, Houston Baptist, Houston Christian now, excuse me, you know, those schools that they can face, Rice, et cetera. But no, I really like the idea of just getting a premier opponent. And just from a team building perspective, Chip, yeah, man, go face a team like that and see where you're at. Because I think that's a huge level setting type game.
Yeah. And Rick Barnes was always, of course, he was a mentor, still is a mentor to Rodney Terry. Terry spent, you know, 9 years on his staff. And Rick Barnes was always looking to play the toughest teams in the non-conference, because if you win that game, it's a huge boost to your NCAA tournament resume. And if you lose that game, it's not as punitive as playing a lesser team. Now we would say a quad three or quad four team and losing that game, which can be really detrimental. We saw that last year when Texas lost at home to Central Florida after having a, you know, 16-point lead. That loss kind of haunted them for a while until they could get above water. So that's a sign to me that Rodney Terry thinks he's got the program headed in the right direction, that he's got a team that can compete against the big dogs. And so that's good news, and good news for the fans, because the fans love, as you said, the event type of game. All right, Eric, you ready for some love it or what's wrong with me? I mean, you ready for some take it or leave it?
Chip, I'm ready for both of those, but for the sake of this show, take it or leave it.
Let's do it. Some take it or leave it. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Okay. All right. And if you're watching us on the Horns 24/7 YouTube channel, we will roll on with some take it or leave it.
All right. I'm up first, Chip. Some take it or leave it on a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being the highest. Your level of concern about last year's starting field side corner and Terrence Brooks hitting the portal is a 5. Take it or leave it.
I'm going to leave this. It is, you know, you hate to lose this kind of experience, a guy who, you know, played 589 snaps for you in 2023, but there was definitely a push to increase the competition for Terrence Brooks, that field corner position, from, you know, Gavin Holmes to Warren Roberson, to the freshmen they brought in, Kobe Black and Wardell Mack, to name a couple. So I'm going to leave this. There, I think, was a very clear push, and Terrence Brooks clearly got the message. And so he's going to pursue opportunities elsewhere. But no, my level of concern is not a 5. So I'm going to leave this. Eric, how about you?
Chip, I'm going to leave it as well. Even when I wrote the piece today, I wanted to emphasize that I do think, listen, you don't lose a player who played your most snaps as a cornerback, right? And whether or not Terrence Brooks was going to play the same role that he did last year, I think that certainly is something that you could have certainly speculated about, as you've talked about on this episode, but he was going to be in the rotation, right? I don't think you lose that and you just summarily dismiss, all right, Sark's got a plan, blah, blah, blah. However, yeah, I do believe that this is a reshaping of this secondary. And I do think naturally with that reshaping, there was going to come some attrition and come some, maybe some tough conversations, right? And Sark talked about having his exit meetings and who knows what came from that. But it's not a 5. I do think because of what you talked about, you have Jahdae Barron, Jalen Gilbo. I think that's a great problem to have, right? Because you got to find a way to get both those guys on the field. And I do think they'll find someone in the portal. What that looks like remains to be seen. But no, not a 5. I'd put it at a 3.5, but not a 5 yet. So, and really quick, I'll add one last thing. Even though Texas, and I wrote this, you know, Texas ranked 113th in passing yards allowed, the devil's in the details. There were, quite frankly, a lot of those yards were in teams trying to make an effort to come back in games and really abandoning the run early on. So that number can be misleading. Take a look at the pass efficiency. They were 47th in pass efficiency because of the fact they created turnovers and the completion percentage was low. But still, you don't necessarily want to give up that many passing yards. So it's not quite as drastic as maybe it may seem. So there you go, Chip.
Yeah. And to Terrence Brooks' credit, he was tied for the team lead in interceptions last year with 3. He had a pickoff in the BYU game, in the K-State game, and in the Texas Tech game. Played a lot of good football for Texas. So it does hurt from a depth standpoint, no doubt. All right, take it or leave it. Number 2, Eric, your top defensive player from the spring.
Apologies, I flipped those. Apologies, Chip.
Okay, your top defensive player from the spring is sophomore linebacker Anthony Hill Jr. Take it or leave it.
I was thinking, and guess what, Chip? I decided not to overthink it. I'm going with Anthony Hill. I'm taking this. Will Anthony Hill end up being the top defensive player come the end of the regular season? I think the answer is yes. But no, I think right now you take a look at this defense and listen, Ethan Burke, Baron Sorrell, talented guys in their own right. The secondary still working itself out. You know, Jahdae Barron didn't play much in the spring. Everyone knows how much I love Jahdae Barron's player. He didn't play much during the spring. Anthony Hill just looks like a guy who's ready to take that next step and be that guy who can, quite frankly, Chip, make a defense, in my opinion. So I'm taking it.
Okay. I'm going to leave this for now because I feel like Alfred Collins really asserted himself at a position that Texas absolutely needs him to assert himself. I think he's stepped forward as a leader and a guy who provides some reassurance to a player like Anthony Hill, who had the good fortune of playing behind T'Vondre Sweat and Byron Murphy last year alongside of last year's you know, 2-time first team All Big 12 selection at middle linebacker Jalen Ford. So I may, you know, let's come back to this in fall camp because Anthony Hill is still making the transition to middle linebacker from weak side linebacker and all the other little nuanced edge rushing strong side linebacker snaps that he played last year because he's that talented. But for this spring, I'm going to give some love to Alfred Collins as my top defensive player from the spring, Eric.
I will bring us home, take it or leave it, number three. As I said, I flipped those, so apologies. Your top player on offense from the spring is the freshman from St. Louis, Missouri, Ryan Wingo. Take it or leave it.
I'll tell you what. We did hear a lot of great things about Ryan Wingo from the beginning. Steve Sarkisian was talking about, you know, after scrimmage one, man, Ryan Wingo, he doesn't look like a freshman. He's making mistakes at 100 miles an hour. He looks comfortable. He's playing fast. I think Ryan Wingo is special. But I'm going to leave this because I think Jaden Blue might have had the best spring on offense from what I'm hearing. And he did have a touchdown catch in the spring game. And, you know, Jaden Blue told us he is looking at this like a contract year. I think he's grown up. I think he's one of the better stories on this Texas football team. So, Eric, I am going to leave this, although don't get it twisted. I think Ryan Wingo is going to be a sensation. But for the spring, I'll give the nod to Jaden Blue. So I'm leaving this. How about you, Eric?
Chip, I will not add much more because I am leaving it, and my answer is going to be Jaden Blue. Everything we've heard is about how this guy is the real deal. We've seen him in camp, that he is coming in ready. And listen, the fact that both these running backs are humble and say they want to split carries, that's great. And it's great for – it makes Steve Sarkisian's life great and Tashard Choice's life great when and or if they have to figure out that running back rotation. And everyone knows I'm a big C.J. Baxter guy. I mean, I certainly think C.J.'s prime for a big year in my own right. But if we're just talking about from the spring and everything we've heard, no, I think Jaden Blue is the answer there, Chip. And that's, again, no shade on Ryan Wingo, who everything he said is true. Had a great spring, hit the ground running, looks like he's going to be an impact player day one. But no, I'm going with Jaden Blue.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the offense sure looks like it's going to be in total reload mode as opposed to rebuild mode. And that's something that Texas fans are still getting used to. It's in the past, it's been much more about rebuilding than about reloading. But it looks like Texas, the defending and last time Big 12 champions, are in reload mode on offense. So kudos to all those players on offense who had, you know, big time spring camps. You know, Kelvin Banks, the offensive line has been very good. I mean, the frontline starters, Kelvin Banks, Hayden Connor, Jake Majors, DJ Campbell, Cam Williams have been, you know, very solid throughout the spring. And you got to give the big boys in the trenches some love because they do the dirty work and make it all possible for Quinn Ewers, Arch Manning, Trey Owens to stand in that pocket and sling it all over the field to guys like Ryan Wingo, Isaiah Bond, and DeAndre Moore and Jonte Cook. So good stuff. Good stuff, Eric. All right. Hey, everybody. Thank you. Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Flagship Podcast. Of course, we'll be back to do it again. So until then, we'll see you over at horns247.com, where all of you should be annual members so that you don't miss any breaking news about the transfer portal or who knows what as it concerns Texas football, basketball, baseball, you name it. We give it all to you over at horns247.com. So for Eric Henry, I am Chip Brown. Until next time, stay safe and keep the faith.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.